Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It has been a very, very busy day in America as we continue to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic. Infection cases continue to rise, as do the number of deaths. And then there's the politics of election 2020, peaceful transfer of power or not, the uncertainty of it all. We are at the Reporters Roundtable to discuss the top stories of the week. My guests are Mika Green, D.C. editor of the Afro-American Newspapers, and Kelly Macias, editor-at-large for Black Women United. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Ladies, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you for having us. It's so good to be back on the Reporters Roundtable.
Absolutely. Good to have you. Kelly, can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly. Thank you so much for having me back.
Absolutely. So we've got some big brains on deck. So I'm great. I'm looking forward to engaging you in some great conversation. Let us start with the latest. The Coronavirus Task Force held a press conference about an hour or so ago. It was the first one since July. We saw Dr. Deborah Birx. We saw Dr. Anthony Fauci. We saw Vice President Mike Pence. We did not see President Trump. Mika, I'll start with you. Your thoughts about what we heard today.
Well, thank you for asking that. And yeah, it's been the first since July.
Yeah.
And we saw a lot of heavy hitters except the leader of the free world. Obviously, Vice President Pence is head of the task force, but it would have been nice to see the president there. You know, the task force really worked to emphasize that we need to remain vigilant. They talked about rising cases, there was something that Secretary Alex Azar said, which I really liked, which was hope and help. That transparency is what we need to hear, which is that we still do need help and that we are still being helpful in this time. I'm disappointed that we haven't heard from the task force since July. These rising numbers were rising before this week, and us getting closer and closer to the Thanksgiving holiday, I think it's important that they emphasize that numbers are rising. And that people should stay safe and vigilant. And so I'm happy that that was sort of the message and emphasis behind the press conference. But people are still looking for answers, and I think that that's what was lacking.
And I think, you know, you make an interesting point. The only new thing that, you know, that came out of this was, you know, Dr. Deborah Birx says that one of the reasons that we are seeing the community spread, the high numbers of infection across the country, is because there are asymptomatic people who have the coronavirus and don't know it. They are out and about as if we aren't in the middle of a pandemic, Kelly. And I just find that shocking.
Yeah, I find it shocking but not surprising. And I think it's because we've had such terrible messaging from our government, right? And such a lack of leadership at a time that is so critical. You know, even in the press conference today, you know, Mike Pence said that, you know, this administration has never been more prepared to deal with this virus, and we know that they haven't been prepared before. So, you know, I can't imagine that they're doing anything new now. They didn't take questions from the press, which would have been really important because lots of us want answers. We want to know why the current sitting president has abdicated his responsibilities and, you know, hasn't been seen in like a week. You know, Mike Pence also talked about schools remaining open. He argued against the national lockdown, even though we've never really had one. But, you know, it seems to me that there's still this mixed messaging about what we're supposed to do. The scientists, right, and the medical professionals are very clear. We need to continue social distancing. We need to continue washing our hands. We need to watch how many people were around for exactly the reason you named, Harold, that there's all these asymptomatic people walking around infecting others. And yet the top leadership is largely absent and repeating sort of these messages that I think are causing a lot of people not to take it as seriously as they need to.
You know, Mika, one of the other things that I found really interesting, and I'll share this with both of you and our listeners. When the task force started, I'm in the newsroom trying to, and this is a little inside baseball for our listeners. You know, when I'm in the newsroom, I have two computers up where I can pull up newscasts from wherever they happen to be, you know, whether they're local, whether it's national, whether it's international. Then I have two televisions that I'm watching. So, you know, I've got ears all over my head and eyes all over my head. I look like a spider because we're always paying attention to so much. But the thing that was so fascinating to me was that neither CNN nor MSNBC carried the Coronavirus Task Force presser today. Fox News did, and we also saw it on other feeds. Is this where we are right now, where even the so-called mainstream news organizations are just throwing shade to anything that comes out of the White House, even if the president is not there and the top infectious disease experts are there, Mika?
You know, it's interesting you say that, because one could say that it's a little bit of shade, but I don't think it's shade about the issues at hand, because I think that most of the reputable news organizations know how incredibly important it is to have these conversations and these task force pressers. But I think the shade comes primarily how the press has been treated by this administration. As Kelly said, the press did not even get the opportunity to ask questions as we should generally do at such pressers. Vice President Pence spoke a lot about the fact that the president wanted this opportunity for reporters to be in the room, and yet reporters were not really acknowledged for their level of preparation in going into a presser. I'm sure many of those reporters there had tons of questions that would have been helpful for their audiences, as well as sort of larger national and international audiences. And so I think that a bit of that shade comes from the fact that these news directors knew that they would send their reporters in there, one, potentially risking their lives, two, because they would not necessarily get respect, and three, not necessarily get new information, which is key as news producers. If we're going to have 90 minutes or an hour or whatever of a press conference, we want to ensure that the information getting to the people is new. And that is unfortunately not really what we saw today.
That's true.
Later.
Not until much, much later, because in listening to Vice President Mike Pence, I was just getting a 2020 history lesson. He just kept going over and over, you know, what we already know, but he wasn't really sharing any new information. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable. A lot of stuff to cover today as it relates to the pandemic, as it relates to politics and the like. If you have a comment, if you have a question, we'd love to hear from you at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Walter, calling from Northeast D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Walter, are you there? Walter, give me a call back if you can. 202 219-7810, 202-319-7810. One of the other things that happened today, President-elect Joe Biden in Delaware, again, holding a press briefing where he was talking with governors, Republicans and Democrats, about moving forward with fighting the coronavirus. That was interesting. It was a handful of governors, including Larry Hogan from Maryland. He said he was extremely encouraged by what he heard, and that the all of the governors, no matter what side of the aisle they were on, their political persuasions, all of them really, really focused on common ground and trying to, you know, curb the coronavirus, dealing with vaccine distribution and the like. Kelly, your thoughts about what the optics of today?
I think it's exactly what Joe Biden campaigned on, which was this idea that he wanted to unite people across division, that he was taking the pandemic and is taking this pandemic seriously, and that his number one focus is, you know, ensuring the safety of the people in the United States. And so the idea that, you know, he would have a press briefing, you know, to talk with those who are in, you know, in the opposing political party makes absolute sense to me, particularly because, you know, at this point we are, you know, we're in crisis. I mean, we've been in crisis, but we know that this is escalating. There have been more than 250,000 deaths from this pandemic. You know, I just saw that the Smithsonian Museums are closing here in D.C. on Monday. You know, all kinds of new restrictions related to curfews in California, right? Schools are closing, all sorts of things. And so, you know, it just, to me, is a reminder that Joe Biden is doing what he said he was going to do, which was to bring people together, and that he was going to focus on what Donald Trump has not done, which is to really figure out a way to curb the you know, stem of this horrible virus.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the other things that I also found really, you know, fascinating, you know, you both of you can jump in if you want, Mika, we can start with you, is that I've noticed, again, this is about the political optics here, that usually whenever there is one of these long-form press conferences, the president-elect speaks, but we also hear from the vice president-elect. We hear from Kamala Harris. That, you know, based on, you know, my memory, is something that is, you know, particularly unique. Why do you suppose that is happening? Does it have to do with her popularity? Is this a show of unity? What do you think?
Well, I think it's all of the above. I think absolutely it's a show of unity. But we have to remember, President-elect Biden first served as vice president. Now, of course, he had many other roles in elected leadership, but right, he sort of rose to fame and who we know as vice president. And so he understands the importance of that role. And he made it very clear that Kamala Harris would be the kind of vice president that he was in terms of responsibility, in terms of speaking, in terms of being a leader for the people. I got to be quite honest, I did not really know what President Pence sounded like until he began doing these COVID task force meetings as well. as well as, of course, the amazing fly moment in the vice presidential debate. But I did not know what our VPs sounded like after the past 4 years. You know, everyone can sort of mimic the current president. But we knew what Joe Biden was and what he sounded like and what he stood for as vice president. And so I think that show of unity of two leaders who can collaborate and work together is so incredibly important. It definitely, I think, made a difference in terms of optics during the Obama administration. And I think it'll make a very, very big difference in this upcoming administration, as well as we sort of get comfortable with this transition of power, to see that these two people are working hand in hand and collaboratively versus sort of this totalitarian approach that we've seen from the current president and his administration.
Let me grab a quick phone call real quick. 202-319-7810. Karen, real quick before I go to a break, what's on your mind?
Hello?
Karen, go right ahead quickly. You got 30 seconds before I go to a break. What's on your mind?
Yes, my comment is just about the election and why we're giving so much energy to the fact that Donald Trump won't concede and that he won't do what he's supposed to do, when it's overwhelming evidence that Joe Biden has won. I feel like, you know, with all the news cycles and all of the attention being paid, that he's actually getting, you know, he's feeling good that, you know, he's getting so much attention for not doing what he should be doing. I'm just wondering what the thought is. I mean, there's continuous 24-hour news cycles about him not doing what he's supposed to be doing. And I'm just wondering if maybe if we just ignore him, if the news cycles start ignoring him, if that would make a difference. I don't know what anybody else thinks about it, but I just think maybe, you know, when somebody's throwing a tantrum, you just kind of ignore them.
Interesting. Karen, can you hang on? Because I've got to take a break, but I want, you know, my panelists to both chime in, and I also have something to say. Also, Mike calling from Prince George's County, we're going to hear from you, so please don't hang up. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about the top stories of the day. This conversation is going to continue on SiriusXM. Coming up next on WHUR, John Mons and the original Quiet Storm. But we've got some doozy of some topics when we're talking about the Reporters Roundtable. So please stay with us. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. We're at the Reporters Roundtable talking about the top stories of the week. Really, the top stories of the day. So much stuff is happening right now. My guest, Mika Green, D.C. editor of the Afro-American Newspapers, and Kelly Macias, editor-at-large for Black Women United. Lines are still open. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise we will get to your phone calls at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Okay, Kelly, I'll let you have first shot at Karen's question. You know, why do you suppose there's so much attention being paid to Donald Trump and his lack of cooperation in this transition?
Yeah, I love this question. I'm glad that Karen asked it because I think, you know, all of us are really fatigued at this point of the Trump stories and the 24/7 news cycle revolving around him and what he's not supposed to do or what he's doing, what he's not doing. I would say a few things about why it's so important. I think, you know, one, we hear this word all the time, but I'm going to use it anyway, that it's unprecedented, right? We've never had a sitting president refused to accept the results of the election and agreed to a peaceful transition of power. So that makes sense. But it's also that, yeah, he's a toddler having a tantrum, but with real consequences, right? There's consequences to the fact that, you know, this president, you know, the head of the General Services Agency has not released funding to the incoming administration so that they can start, you know, the transition process, so they can start accessing, you know, agencies for security clearance, right? So all of these things really matter, because the longer that Donald Trump tries to, you know, throw things to the wall and hope they stick related to these legal challenges, the longer the continuity of government is put at risk. There's also national security issues at stake, right? So, you know, he's been dropping these sort of foreign policy bombs, and, you know, can continue to do so up until the time of the inauguration. So I would say that, you know, we know that Trump is big business and ratings and outrage drive, you know, viewership and all of that. But I think really it's because there's some serious consequences to the fact that this is not happening in a way that can ensure our continuity of government.
Mika, your thoughts about it?
Completely agree with Kelly.
Yeah.
While I really appreciate your question, Karen, and I too am sick of giving this man as much attention as we do. At the Afro, we talk about how we can refer to the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue without saying his name sometimes, just because we give him so much attention. But unfortunately, this tantrum does have consequences. And even more importantly, and sometimes terrifying, is that this information that's getting out, half of the United States completely is hanging on to every word and agrees with it and is taking it as fact. And so when you think about that, it's our duties as reporters to continue talking about it in the news cycle, even if it's solely to fact check what President Trump is saying, what Vice President Pence is saying, and the information particularly regarding this transition of power and what's coming from Giuliani. I just read an article, and almost, I think, 90% of the information that Giuliani said in today's press conference, which was about 90 minutes, had information that you had to fact check because it just was not true. And so while we know the legitimacy of the election and that Americans did indeed elect Joe Biden, there are still so many people that I'm seeing on my timeline, people that I went to college with, who are taking everything that the president and vice president and Rudy Giuliani is saying and saying, oh, we are still in the race. This race is not over. And that is why these conversations are so incredibly important. The president doesn't have to concede, but we do have to give back.
That's true. And I agree with both of them. And I think, you know, the other thing, Karen, there are just some simple foundational things here. This is a lesson in American history and American civics and and understanding how our government works, how the Constitution works, how it is supposed to work, and to really be able to watch our elected leaders, and I include all of them, whether you support them or not, you know, whether it's the Steny Hoyers or the Ted Cruzes, and, you know, to see how people are positioning themselves and to see, you know, just how power, you know, the saying absolute power corrupts absolutely. But the other thing, you know, that Kelly said, this is unprecedented. We've never seen anything, you know, like this. The closest we've seen is Bush v. Gore. But even, but both, you know, George Bush and Al Gore were still statesmen, even in that very volatile process that ended up in the highest court in the land. This is a whole different ball game, and it bears watching by everyone. But thank you so much for your thoughtful question. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mike, calling from Prince George's County. Thanks for calling back, Mike. What's on your mind?
Okay, this is about the pandemic.
Yes, sir.
And the lab proof, where is it? And the second question is, do you think the 5G transmissions might have something to do with it and Bill Gates' involvement? And also, the vaccines, do they have nanobot chips in them? And those are my questions.
What was the first thing that you said, the lab?
Yeah, where's the proof in the labs?
What do you mean, proofs? I don't understand that question.
Well, you got to understand it because we haven't seen any proof about the coronavirus in any labs.
Okay.
Any labs. There are no labs. No scientists have shown us any proof of any coronavirus in any labs. And also, there are 5G transmissions. They stopped at the China, Wuhan market. Is there any proof that the 5G telecommunications transmission shooting from one telephone to a tower and back and forth being hot and everybody having 5G.
Okay, so let me stop you there, and I'll ask, you know, my guests, who wants to take on the conspiracy theorists, theories?
Because we haven't proven that they weren't.
Yeah, they have been, actually. But who wants to start? Mika, Kelly, either one.
We're stuck in
math. Just hold on for a minute, Mike. Go right ahead. Mika, Kelly, who wants to start?
I'll go ahead and take it. I was sitting with my head down thinking, should I let me defer to Kelly first?
No, go ahead, please.
But I truly have to say that this is the danger in conspiracy theories, because I understand your question, Mike, in terms of wanting to know whether or not this vaccine is even something that we should be taking or be considering. But COVID-19 is so very real. We've seen over 260,000 Americans die from it. And the worldwide totals are just incredibly devastating. But more importantly, from a personal standpoint, there have been a few people very close to me in life who have fought and luckily come out the other way and then on the other side of COVID-19. But not everyone has had that testimony. And so I think it is really unfair to the people who have buried family members and those who have battled COVID-19 and the 260,000 Americans who have died, more than 260,000 Americans who have died from the pandemic, to say that we cannot prove that COVID-19 is real. It is absolutely real. It is devastating. And the surge is quite alarming. We're seeing it in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia region in numbers that we haven't seen in quite some time. And as a member of this group in particular, I'm going to warn my millennials to please, please, please take extra precaution. Even though you think that we can fight it, 25 to 54 are the largest group growing in COVID-19 cases in Washington, D.C. proper. And I've been seeing a lot of people out and at small events at people's houses, or at the go-go. And at this point, it's just not worth it. Not only are you risking endangering other people, but you want to be there for your family and those you care about. And so don't also risk yourself and others. But COVID-19 is really, really, really real, Mike. And I thank you for your question and concern. I think the thing that we really need to look out for and do our research on is this vaccine. Where is it going, and how quickly we should be rushing to places to get the vaccine.
Yeah. Kelly, your thoughts?
Yeah, thank you for taking that question first, because it gave me some time to formulate my thoughts. As someone who has had family members who've had COVID and had a friend who died from COVID, yeah, I would just echo that it's real. I think the question also speaks to, like, the mistrust of government and of technology, and frankly, how disinformation spreads. I also think people are sick of this, right? Like, you know, it's been 8 months that a lot of us have been inside, and we've had to change, you know, all of our behaviors to try to, curb the stem of this virus. So I get all of that, and I understand that. I also just, you know, want to underscore that this is a disease that is, you know, disproportionately making sick and killing Black people, right? And so as a Black woman, I cannot help but take it seriously because I think of all the ways that I am at risk. I think of all the ways the people, you know, in my family and in my community and friends and people that I love are at risk. And so, you know, I get that there's much we don't know about it. That is true. It's emerging every day. The information and the science is evolving every day. But I think it's disingenuous to say that it's not real.
I will say, and these things, Mike, did come up in a conversation that we had, you know, last week when we were doing kind of a coronavirus update. And so, before I even get into that, we do have some breaking news. As expected, this coming out of Georgia, the hand recount of some 5 million votes has confirmed President-elect Joe Biden's lead over President Trump. Again, that hand recount confirming that Vice President Joe Biden in Georgia is the president-elect in that Georgia contest, beating President Trump. So that information just coming out of Georgia right now. To Mike's issue, I think that it is irrefutable that, you know, when we have some 250,000 dead Americans as a result of this virus, I don't know specifically about the lab question, but if you didn't believe in the beginning of the year, I think you would be hard pressed not to believe it. And, you know, as a matter of fact, there was a conversation just yesterday, I believe it was this morning on NBC News, about, you know, some of the things that doctors are saying, even as they are about to intubate patients who have been struck down by the coronavirus. And a lot of them are questioning, well, they said this can't be the coronavirus. They say it's the flu. Or others have said, I wish I had paid more attention. I wish I had worn a mask. Yes, this is very, very real. Now, on the other things, you talk about this nanobot thing and the virus and conspiracy theories and 5G. So let's be really, 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 I got three reallys for you. Really clear about, you know, those two issues, both of those conspiracy theories, and they are conspiracy theories. This comes from, again, the QAnon conspiracy theory website. These are the same people who have been promoting these theories that said that, you know, Hillary Clinton was part of this child sex trafficking thing in Chevy Chase, Maryland, the Pizzagate thing that has already put, you know, one man, you know, behind bars because he believed that, you know, the conspiracy theory. And I think that we really have to be extremely careful about understanding conspiracy theories. And there's something that we always say in journalism, and we should also say, as you know, as well in, you know, just amongst ourselves, you know, consider the source. Where is this information, you know, coming from? I had a friend of mine send me something on social media, a video of a quote unquote reputable doctor who had, you know, all of the who had all the paper. You know, she was a medical doctor, but she's also a conspiracy theorist, and she was pushing some of these QAnon things. And you know, when I got the inbox, you know, my friend said, hey, look, watch this before they erase it. And I hit her right back and I said, this is a conspiracy theorist. It's QAnon. Let's be critical thinkers. And I'm not saying don't be skeptical, but don't let your skepticism put you in a hospital. You don't want that. Just something to think about. Mike, thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate your listening. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. What about, ladies, what about this this news coming out of Georgia? Not a bit of a surprise about the hand count?
No, not at all a surprise. again, as we were just talking about per Karen's question, it is really good to see that we're getting these numbers and fairly quickly. I mean, it's ridiculous that we're sort of in this place of recounting and you know, questioning poll workers, et cetera. But it wasn't at all a surprise, and happy that there's been some finality out of Georgia.
Yeah.
At least the presidential election.
Yeah. Don't forget, we do have two Senate runoffs coming in January. The Washington Post is reporting that this hand recount resulted in a 0.0099% variation from the original winning margin. It doesn't get any thinner than that.
Yeah, and I completely agree with something you said earlier, Harold, which was about the importance of people understanding our democracy and how it functions. And so, you know, I think it's been interesting to watch, because a lot of people don't know that the results, the initial results, are usually projected by the media, but the certification happens later. And so this is part of that process, right, that we're all getting to witness. And in some ways, you know, understanding the recounts, understanding that there can be lawsuits, you know, all of that, I think just really lets us know that, one, our democracy right now is functioning how it should, but also that it's fragile and that, you know, there are lots of things that can upend it. And so I think this is a really important moment to understand what is happening here.
I do want to move on to something else that happened earlier today. And this was really, really fascinating. And we really need to, you know, to address it. And this goes back to where we are as far as the vote, you know, the accusations of fraud by the and conspiracy by the president's attorney, you know, Rudy Giuliani, where he's saying that there was a nationwide security conspiracy to, you know, to unseat, you know, President Trump. And, you know, and when I was thinking about that, when I was listening, if you can call some 75 million votes against President Trump a conspiracy, then I guess that is the case. But we call it voting. And, you know, Kelly, that's what happened.
Right. I think it's so interesting that the narrative has been that Democrats have masterminded this massive election conspiracy, because if that's true, I think that, you know, Democrats wouldn't have lost some key races.
They wouldn't have lost 2016.
Right? Right. I mean, like, you know, so that's giving Democrats a lot of credit. But it also ignores that actually more people voted for Donald Trump this time than last time. Right. And so, you know, it doesn't make sense, but it's the direction that they're going. And they are calling into question the process, right, that mail-in ballots are not legitimate, that there's been widespread tampering, you know, with voting machines. I mean, the press conference was really, you know, I can't think of another word except unhinged.
Oh,
I mean,
bizarre.
This idea of, like, no legal proof. You know, I have names, but I'm refusing to name names, you know, quoting my cousin Vinny. You know, all kinds of things that are just utterly bizarre, but again, designed to have people sort of not have faith, right, and undermine the process. It's been incredibly fascinating and also painful to watch.
I would agree. I would agree. You know, Mika, your thoughts about that press conference and these accusations of fraud and conspiracy by the president's attorney.
Yeah, you know, again, first of all, it was just entirely too long to be filled with all of those accusations and a significant amount of just false facts. You know, we talk a lot about the president's lack of presidential behavior, but sort of what I saw particularly from the president's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, was, I thought, very un-attorney-like. Again, just sort of these, somebody said that happened, and so we actually don't really have proof of that, but we're alleging that there was voter fraud. And then there, which I've seen a lot of from Giuliani in this, and Trump's administration in particular, in the past couple of days, there's a lot of copping pleas where they've used terms such as voter fraud and voter suppression. And yet, when the judge sort of specifically and blatantly asked, was Giuliani alleging to voter fraud, he replied, oh, well, this is not a fraud case. I am a little disappointed that the world is sort of viewing this process in this way, because it's the lack of grace, the lack of sort of presidential and this, as I said earlier, at this juncture, legal and attorney behavior we're not really seeing. But on the other side, like you said, Harold and Kelly, so eloquently, that it's great that people are getting the opportunity to be educated on the democratic process. I know that I can only imagine the Google reports on people talking about voter recounts and what states even allow recounting. And I'd be amazed to see, and when I did a lot of interviews on Election Day and leading up to Election Day, I'd really be amazed to see how many people are now signing up to be poll workers for the midterm. In 2022, we saw a lot of people in Washington, D.C. sign up in record numbers to serve as poll workers. And so I think that while this process is a little discouraging at times, it also will encourage people to be even more involved in the democratic process.
Yeah, especially when we are talking about nearly 160 million people voting. Mm-hmm. That's half the population of this country, you know. And but then, you know, you could ask, well, what happened to the other half? But we're still talking about, you know, record numbers of people voting and getting involved in the process. And I do believe that is extremely laudable. I think the we're gonna be talking about Karen all day. But, you know, she was talking about the attention that, you know, the media is paying to President Trump. This is one of the other things, short of his Twitter feed, is that, you know, and I think it's safe to say that this is the quietest that we have not only heard this president in the midst of a major crisis, but I would argue I cannot remember this kind of string of no comment from a president in modern history, where you just did not hear the president. The president didn't speak after the election after his first comment for 8 days. And that was, a week ago today or a week ago tomorrow? And then we haven't heard from him since. He's just been, kind of playing golf. And at a time when people are expecting to hear, no matter what you hear, what you think of the particular president, you expect to hear from your leader when we are now seeing this horrible second surge. And instead, there's just all of this maneuvering, behind the scenes. And so I think that is, particularly interesting. And not to mention, and I think this is also important, this is just fascinating to me, that the president did call the Republican on the Wayne County, Michigan Board of Canvassers in Detroit, Chair Monica Palmer, you know, a kind of a, hey, Monica, you doing all right over there? You know, I just find that really strange and fascinating.
Well, it's just exactly what I've been able to expect from this administration overall. You know, the president tweeted 4 hours ago that the reason why they withdrew from Wayne County was because they won. and the election was certified on Tuesday night. So again, this is false. That is just false information. So, you know, while the president's silence or rather I should say chosen verbaciousness, if you will, I think it's primarily because of the fact that he does not know when it is when there's a good opportunity to speak, other than when he is touting himself or giving false information, as we see today.
We are living in unusual times. I want to thank, you know, both of you, Amika Green and Kelly Macias, for talking to us. One thing's for sure, we have a lot of work to do in the coming months when it comes to reporting on where we are right now. COVID, politics, and the end of 2020. Let us hope that 2021 is a lot better. Ladies, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. That is the
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Thursday, November 19th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.